理课堂听 class.com
Chapter 5 The expression following suit is a curious one, because it has nothing to do with walking behind a matching set of clothing. If you follow suit, it means you do the same thing somebody else has just done. If all of your friends decided to jump off a bridge into the icy waters of an ocean or river, for instance, and you jumped in right after them, you would be following suit. You can see why following suit can be a dangerous thing to do, because you could end up drowning simply because somebody else thought of it first. This is why, when Violet stood up from the hay and said, "How do you do, Coach Genghis?" Klaus and Sunny were reluctant to follow suit. It was inconceivable to the younger Baudelaires that their sister had not recognized Count Olaf, and that she hadn't leapt to her feet and informed Vice Principal Nero what was going on. For a moment, Klaus and Sunny even considered that Violet had been hypnotized, as Klaus had been back when the Baudelaire orphans were living in Paltryville. But Violet's eyes did not look any wider than they did normally, nor did she say, "How do you do, Coach Genghis?" in the dazed tone of voice Klaus had used when he had been under hypnosis. But although they were puzzled, the younger Baudelaires trusted their sister absolutely. She had managed to avoid marrying Count Olaf when it had seemed like it would be inevitable, a word which here means a lifetime of horror and woe. She had made a lockpick when they needed one in a hurry, and had used her inventing skills to help them escape from some very hungry leeches. So even though they could not think what the reason was, Klaus and Sunny knew that Violet must have had a good reason to greet Count Olaf politely rather than reveal him instantly, and so, after a pause, they followed suit. "How do you do, Coach Genghis?" Klaus said.
"Gefido!" Sunny shrieked.
"It's a pleasure to meet you,"
Coach Genghis said, and smirked. The Baudelaires could tell he thought he had fooled them completely and was very pleased with himself.
"What do you think, Coach Genghis?"
Vice-Principal Nero asked.
"Do any of these orphans have the legs you're looking for?"
Coach Genghis scratched his turban and looked down at the children as if they were an all-you-can-eat salad bar instead of five orphans.
"Oh, yes,"
he said, in the wheezy voice the Baudelaires still heard in their nightmares. With his bony hands, he pointed first at Violet, then at Klaus, and lastly at Sunny.
"These three children here are just what I'm looking for, all right. I have no use for these twins, however."
"Neither do I,"
Nero said, not bothering to point out that the Quagmires were triplets. He then looked at his watch.
"Well, it's time for my concert. Follow me to the auditorium, all of you, unless you are in the mood to buy me a bag of candy."
The Baudelaire orphans hoped never to buy their vice-principal a gift of any sort, let alone a bag of candy, which the children loved and hadn't eaten in a very long time. So they followed Nero out of the orphan's shack and across the lawn to the auditorium. The Quagmires followed suit, staring up at the gravestone buildings, which looked even spookier in the moonlight.
"This evening," Nero said, "I will be playing a violin sonata I wrote myself. It only lasts about a half hour, but I will play it 12 times in a row."
"Oh, good," Coach Genghis said. "If I may say so, Vice Principal Nero, I am an enormous fan of your music. Your concerts were one of the main reasons I wanted to work here at Prufrock Prep."
"Well, it's good to hear that," Nero said. "It's difficult to find people who appreciate me as the genius I am."
"I know the feeling," Coach Genghis said. "I'm the finest gym teacher the world has ever seen. And yet there hasn't even been one parade in my honor."
"Shocking,"
Nero said, shaking his head. The Baudelaires and the Quagmires, who were walking behind the adults, looked at one another in disgust at the braggy conversation they were overhearing, but they didn't dare speak to one another until they arrived at the auditorium, taking seats as far away as possible from Carmelita Spatz and her loathsome friends. There is one, and only one, advantage to somebody who cannot play the violin insisting on doing so anyway, and the advantage is that they often play so loudly that they cannot hear if the audience is having a conversation. It is extremely rude, of course, for an audience to talk during a concert performance, but when the performance is a wretched one and lasts 6 hours, such rudeness can be forgiven. So it was that evening, for after introducing himself with a brief, braggy speech, Vice Principal Nero stood on the stage of the auditorium and began playing his sonata for the first time.
End of Disc 1.